Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. The news is tumbling out of the Middle East. We begin with the most important immediate occasion, which is the visit by the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, to sit with the Prime Minister, Mr. Netanyahu, and other members of the cabinet to discuss after Gaza, after Lebanon. I don't have the solution, but we're looking to the future and what is to be done. The top diplomat for the U.S. is giving hints because of his travel schedule. He's going on to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the UAE. In other words, the gang's getting together, like the band getting together again. For what? Jonathan, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Mr. Blinken has a mission in mind. This isn't only about, or even exclusively about, or even maybe not even mentioned, ceasefire. It's something about governance in Gaza and perhaps Lebanon as well. What does it look like, Jonathan? What do we know? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, I think that the death of Yahya Sinwar last week has opened up a space for conversation across the region. That I think as long as Sinwar still slithered in the tunnels of Gaza, it was hard to imagine a day after, but now that he is gone, and Hamas is very clearly in total disarray, I think there is room for discussion right now. I think the Emiratis, the Saudis, and perhaps even some of the others in the region are beginning to realize that this war cannot last forever and that Israel will grind down its enemies. We're certainly seeing that in Lebanon as well. The discussion on Lebanon, though, I must say, is a bit different in tone and in tenor, very distinct from what's happening in the Gaza front. In Gaza, I think everybody realizes that we're entering into another phase of the war. In Lebanon, I think the war is only heating up. I think that it's going to be very difficult for Mr. Blinken to convince the region that that any deal can be made in Lebanon. He may try. And I think it would be in Lebanon's best interest. And we've seen some Lebanese politicians come out and call for an end to Iranian meddling. There was this fascinating development today where the Israeli military spokesman came out and actually directed the Lebanese people to Hezbollah's vault of cash and gold, trying to get the people to rise up against Hezbollah. But I think trying to merge these two fronts may be a bridge too far for Mr. Blinken. But I think despite all of that, I do think that there is ample room for discussion now about a day after in Gaza. And that is indeed a very good thing.
Yes, let us begin with Gaza, the death of Sinwar. The information I've had these last days, and they're always updating, is that the unit that identified these three Hamas members in the destroyed part of Rafah, the southernmost village of the Gaza Strip, did not know that it was Sinwar and his bodyguards, did not even pursue him as if he was a high-priority target. And he died not from gunshot. Maybe he would have died because he'd been badly wounded. But he died because a tank blew up a building and it fell on him. So it was a surprise to the Israelis. What was surprising to me is we'd been told he was surrounded by hostages. We'd been told he was living in tunnels. We'd been told that he was in complete control of the Hamas units. It very much looks like he'd been cut off, Jonathan, and was operating independently of, say, the fighting in Jabalia in the north. How do you read this inadvertent death of Sinwar by himself in a building that fell on him?
It's a great question, John. And I think it's probably worth noting parenthetically that one of the units involved in his elimination was, it's called Netzach Yehuda. And this is a unit of the IDF that was nearly sanctioned by the Biden administration. just several months prior. And it's fascinating to see now, as the Biden administration has come out and cheered the death of Sinwar, they've been very silent on which units were involved. And I think it's obviously, it points out some of the dangers of the way that this administration has tried to wield sanctions to try to convince the Israelis of pulling back from certain policies as it relates to settlements or two-state solution issues. But bottom line is, it looked like Sinwar had made a mistake, and they always make mistakes eventually. He has probably spent the better part of this war underground, and he's probably spent the better part of this war surrounded by hostages. For some reason that day, he separated himself from his command post. He separated himself from the hostages. He made a mistake. He came up for air. Perhaps he thought he was just going to meet with some of these guys, get a quick shot of vitamin D from being outside in the sun, and then he'd slither back into the tunnels. That's not what happened. Obviously, he was discovered and identified before he was able to escape the scene. He was badly injured, as you mentioned, and then he was sitting in a chair as a drone came in. If you've seen the video, the drone clearly identifies that there is a person there. They had no idea who he was, but once they realized that he was a militant, they called in that tank strike, and thus ended the life of Yahya Sinwar. But, you know, I think we can say that with a lot of these terror leaders and rogue state leaders, they make mistakes, right? When you look at their unceremonious endings, whether it's, you know, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi being found and beaten by a Libyan mob, or Saddam Hussein getting pulled out of a hole in central Iraq, or Osama bin Laden hiding behind his wife as a Navy SEAL took his life. These are not uncommon, right? Eventually, if you live by the sword, you will die by it. And that's exactly what happened to Yahya Sinwar.
After Sinwar, is there any indication, it's been several days now, any indication of the command and control of Hamas? There's fighting in Jabalia. There have been casualties. There's reports of evacuations. Is that random rage, or is that a reconstituting with a new name in charge?
Well, from all indications, it appears that Mohammed Sinwar, Yahya's brother, has been running the war for his brother more on the ground. I believe that he has now taken control of the remaining military brigade and perhaps some of those that have been fighting elsewhere. I would expect Mohammed Sinwar to be the name that we hear for a few days to a few weeks before the Israelis catch up to him. But I really don't see Hamas being able to mount a long-term battle against Israel in any demonstrable way. I think that we'll see something that looks more like low-level or mid-level insurgency as opposed to the hard fighting that we've watched until now. But apart from him, I think we need to keep an eye on a few other external leaders. Khalid Meshaal, one of the long-standing leaders of Hamas, is still based in Qatar. He's a former Politburo leader of Hamas. I actually think the Qataris have a lot of leverage with him. They should put him under arrest upon order of the United States. They should put him in front of an Al Jazeera camera. They should force him, compel him to declare an end of fighting and to call for the release of hostages. You could see him doing that. You could see Hussam Badran, who's one of the international spokespeople, also based in Doha. You could imagine that this would be a winning strategy for the United States to compel this. I've not yet seen the political will on the part of the Biden administration. There are a couple of other names that we could look out for. Probably the only other big one that I would mention is a guy by the name of Khalil Al-Haya. He splits his time between Qatar and Turkey and Lebanon. I don't know where he is now, but he may be also one of the inheritors of the crown, so to speak. But there are really only about three or four recognizable names left, and only one of them appears to be based in Gaza doing the fighting.
Rebuilding or reorganizing Gaza, is there one or two states that have come forward? I've seen Saudi Arabia, but they always play that card. Nothing ever happens. Is there anyone ready to take responsibility who is also trustworthy?
Look, I think that it's too soon. I think the Israelis need to demonstrate that they're able to walk away with a win in Gaza, but not just in Gaza. They need to show that they're able to bring this war to a close. If they're able to do that, that's the kind of strength that I think the Gulf states will respect. and will line up to support. They will come ready to bury the hatchet with Israel and to sign agreements under the auspices of the United States. But I don't see any of that happening until such time as Hamas is fully defeated, until Hezbollah is defeated, and until Iran announces that it will cease this war that it has been waging against Israel on seven fronts.
Let's go north to Hezbollah. Jonathan Shanzer is Senior Vice President of Research at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You ever wonder how far an EV can take you on one charge? Well, most people drive about 40 miles a day, which means you can do all daily stuff no problem. Go to work, grab the kids at school, get the groceries, and still have enough charge to visit your in-laws in the next county. But they don't need to know that. And the best part? You won't have to buy gas at all. The way forward is electric. Explore EVs that fit your life at electricforall.org.
Struggling to see up close? Make it visible with Viz. Viz is a once daily prescription eye drop to treat blurry near vision for up to 10 hours. The most common side effects that may be experienced while using Viz include eye irritation, temporary dim or dark vision, headaches, and eye redness. Talk to an eye doctor to learn if Viz is right for you. Learn more at Viz.com.